The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next hour I will be reading to you from Time Magazine. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com. That is gsuggsinsurance.com. Or call 919-875-8889. To begin with, I will be reading from the most recent edition of Time Magazine, dated October 14, 2024, and it's Time 100 Next. So I will be reading a few entries from that section, The World's Most Influential Rising Stars. As usual, Time itself is bordered in red with a white narrow inner border on the cover. Time is in large white capital block letters. 100 is right next to it in red, and next is superimposed upon the two zeros in white. Jaylen Brown is featured on the cover while spinning a basketball, except it looks stationary here. And then I will move to another edition of Time, since the remainder of this magazine deals with the world's most influential rising stars. Here, then, are the entries that I've selected at random from that. Serena Umbaya, Cooking Up Community, by Kwame Onwuachi. Onwuachi is a James Beard-winning chef and author. Every few generations, a chef emerges who not only embodies the best in our profession, but also makes clear what needs to change. A chef who defies the status quo and breathes new life into this craft. A chef who introduces new ideals and unapologetically represents the culture. On meeting Chef Serena Umbaya, that's M-B-A-Y-E, you notice his eyes. Honest, full of integrity, and bright with the knowledge that life is an opportunity to make this world better. Introducing unfamiliar cultures to American palates is no small feat, but he does so with ease, strengthened by his determination to make African food as recognized and celebrated as other popular culinary traditions. Originally hailing from Senegal, Serena threw himself into the abyss of fine dining, studying under the greats, all the while carrying his country with him. If you are lucky enough to visit Dakar Nola, his New Orleans restaurant, which won a James Beard Award this year, you might see him speaking his native tongue in a dining room full of a kaleidoscope of patrons, some of whom will respond in kind. For Serena, bringing people together with food is not just standing in front of a stove. It is making his restaurant a podium to spread the gospel that African food is enough. Our traditions are avant-garde, and they deserve the utmost respect. Our industry is better because he exists. Caitlin Collins, Astute Interviewer, by Anderson Cooper, who is an Emmy-winning news anchor. Caitlin Collins, C-O-L-L-I-N-S, is the real deal. She is whip-smart, researches relentlessly, and works tirelessly. I'm not sure how many phones she has, but there is at least one pressed to her ear throughout the day as she checks in with sources in campaigns, Congress, and courtrooms. In interviews with lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle, she listens hard to what they say and what they decline to say. Her follow-up questions often make headlines. She started as a political reporter at CNN in 2017, covering the White House. And within just a few years, at age 28, she became the youngest chief White House correspondent in CNN's history. Now she has her own primetime show, The Source, every weeknight. So many people come and go in cable news that it can at times feel like an episode of Survivor. But I am not worried about Caitlin. She will outwit, outplay, and outlast us all. She is that good, and she is only just getting started. Iman Abu Zaid, ABUZEID, matching nurses with jobs. This is by Jamie Ducharme. Years ago, Dr. Iman Abu Zaid and her business partner, Rome Portlock, noticed a disconnect. Abu Zaid's physician relatives often complained about understaffing, while Portlock's nurse relatives complained about the difficulty of finding work. It made no sense for both problems to exist at once, so in 2017, the duo founded Incredible Health to fix them simultaneously. A cross between LinkedIn and Match.com for healthcare. It uses AI to help hospitals find and pursue nurses whose backgrounds fit their open jobs, making hiring more efficient and effective. Today, about 1 million U.S. nurses and 1,500 hospitals use Incredible Health, putting Abu Zaid in the too small club of female CEOs of color running companies valued above $1 billion. One day, she says, we want to be in every category within healthcare, from home health to pharmacy. Now, three more. Asaf Rapoport, Securing Global Data, by Howard Schultz, who is the chairman emeritus of Starbucks. Rapoport is spelled R-A-P-P-A-P-O-R-T. When Asaf Rapoport left Microsoft to start a cybersecurity company called Wiz, W-I-Z, in early 2020, he wondered if his timing was terrible. But amidst the pandemic, he built a firm worth billions that protects the data cloud for thousands of businesses around the world. Just 41, Asaf is wise beyond his years, and he possesses a rare trifecta of high intelligence, emotional intelligence, and towering curiosity. Even so, it is his deep sense of humility that sets him apart. I met Asaf early on in his Wiz journey and was fortunate to be an early investor in the company. From day one, it was clear to me that he aimed to create a great and enduring company steeped in humanity. We have spoken often about how Wiz can be a force for good. He understands his responsibility more than most in the tech sector. And his timing turns out to be great. With an ever-growing list of bad actors trying to mount devastating cyber attacks on businesses and governments around the world, we need his leadership more than ever. Aisha Ibrahim, I-B-R-A-H-I-M, Making Bold Moves, by J. Kenji Lopez-Alt, who is a James Beard award-winning cookbook author. The highlight of my first meal at storied Seattle restaurant Canlis, C-A-N-L-I-S, under Chef Aisha Ibrahim's leadership was a dish of charred eggplant cooked in browned butter along with whipped eggs until crisp on the outside and creamy in the center. It is an evolution of the tortong talong she grew up eating in the Philippines, the third version of the dish on the menu since she took over the kitchen in 2021. The dish spotlights both the ethos of Conli, flavors from across the Pacific, and a focus on simplicity and execution, and Aisha's own story as an immigrant, a woman, and a person of color. Her experiences in a notoriously intolerant industry have led her to transform her own kitchen into a place of vulnerability and growth. To support better working conditions, she took a bold gamble this summer, opening the restaurant only on weekdays. Aisha's technical brilliance and knowledge of ingredients from around the world are what put her in the ranks of other world-class chefs. Her willingness to challenge the norms of kitchen culture and strive for something better is what sets her apart from them. Alexander Wang, WANG, data pioneer by Sam Altman, who is CEO of OpenAI, a time technology and licensing partner. Alex Wang recognized early on that high-quality data are critical to artificial intelligence. As the visionary behind Scale AI, a leading AI firm and our trusted partner at OpenAI, he has built the infrastructure to streamline and perfect data labeling at scale, helping propel us toward artificial general intelligence. Thanks to his leadership, AI innovation is rapidly progressing across industries, from autonomous vehicles to healthcare. His relentlessness in pushing boundaries ensures that AI's transformative potential becomes a reality sooner than we imagined. As a longtime friend of his, I have always been inspired by his drive, vision, and dedication. Setting aside that edition of Time magazine for now and moving backward to September 30, 2024, same format on the cover, except this shows a pictorial, probably an illustrated depiction of former President Donald Trump in his golf cart with the caption, "In Trouble." But we're moving to the inside for other articles. Society, the age of scams. Why you are constantly baited by grifters and more vulnerable than you think. By Alana Samuels. Not long ago, Monica Cottlingham found herself stuffing cash into a Bitcoin machine at a gas station in suburban Maryland and weeping. Earlier that day, she had received a call from a phone number with the same area code as Cottlingham's father in Louisiana. When she answered, someone identifying themselves as a U.S. Customs officer said the government had found a package addressed to Cottlingham that contained stolen passports and driver's licenses. She was in a lot of trouble. Law enforcement was going to call her back. When Cottlingham's phone rang next, the number that came up was from local police, who told her the FBI would be in touch. Minutes later, she got a call from a number that matched the bureau's. The person on the line told Cottlingham that she could get out of the mess by depositing $18,000 into a Bitcoin machine. In retrospect, Cottlingham says, she should have known it was a scam. The game of law enforcement telephone made no sense. All the callers had heavy accents. Each instructed her not to tell anyone what she was doing. The bank teller at Truist, where she withdrew the $18,000, asked if Cottlingham was okay and warned her of scams. Even the Bitcoin machine where she deposited the money had a warning in big red letters to beware of scams and fraud. But Cottellingham, who received the calls on her first day of a medical leave of absence from her job as a psychiatrist, believed at the time they were legitimate. And so, sobbing in distress, she stuffed $10,000 into the machine until she asked the clerk for help to stop. Even then, I think part of me knew, she says. It was incredibly traumatic. Cottellingham's experience is increasingly common. We are living in the golden age of scams. U.S. consumers lost a record $10 billion to fraud in 2023, according to the Federal Trade Commission, a 14% increase over 2022. That tally is almost certainly an undercount. More than three-quarters of victims, including Cottellingham, do not report to authorities that they have been defrauded. We are constantly baited by scammers, by text, by email, by phone. The average smartphone owner in the U.S. gets an estimated 42 spam texts and 28 spam calls per month, according to RoboKiller, an app for screening calls. The scams themselves are more sophisticated than ever before, capable of duping the most skeptical customers. There are romance scams, investment scams, fake job scams. Scammers target everyone from pharmacists in Wisconsin, trying to persuade them to send money because their credentials have supposedly expired, to employees of specific companies, sending emails or texts that they're from the CEO and instructing employees to buy gift cards. We are at an epidemic level of fraud, says Kathy Stokes, director of fraud prevention programs with AARP. The COVID-19 pandemic is one reason. It made people lonelier and more isolated, which research shows makes them more susceptible to fraud. And it pushed more transactions online, where we can more easily fall victim. One in three Americans experiences feelings of loneliness at least once a week, according to a recent poll from the American Psychiatric Association. Members of Gen Z are more anxious and depressed than previous generations, and three times as likely to fall for scams as baby boomers. But there are other factors. Technology enables scammers to reach more marks, robo-dialing many more numbers in a day, or using AI to send carefully crafted emails and text messages. It's also given rise to online marketplaces selling hacker services, scam scripts, and other tools of deception. Social media helps scammers find information about individuals and use it against them. And fraudsters have more of that information because of increasingly common data breaches and can use it to trick us into thinking they are someone they are not. That specific kind of grift is known as an imposter scam. A perpetrator reaches out, pretending to be a government official, a bank representative, or a law enforcement agent. Imposter scams like the one Cottellingham fell victim to were responsible for nearly half of all frauds reported to the FTC in 2023, with about 490,000 people reporting them. Americans said they lost $1.1 billion to imposter scams last year, three times what they lost in 2020. The success of the imposter scam illuminates another reason criminals are able to bilk Americans today. Our trust in institutions has collapsed, making it easier for scammers to pose as authority figures, says Stacy Wood, a fraud expert and professor at Scripps College in California. Authority can look very different now, Wood says. If someone is skeptical of the U.S. government, they often trust someone else who can scam them. Americans may not believe in the government or the media, but we want to believe in something, and sometimes that is a stranger who says they can solve our problems or love us or give us a dream job or take our money in exchange for a better life. Doug Shadle, a fraud expert and consultant who recently directed AARP's Fraud Watch Network, has fought scammers since the 1990s. Back then, employed by the Washington State Attorney General's office, he used to bust so-called boiler rooms, places where dozens of people made scam calls, reading from pre-written scripts and dialing numbers one by one. The scammers might reach a few hundred people in a day, Shadle says, and would have to pay long-distance charges for the phone lines. Now, Shadle says, voice over internet protocol, VOIP technology, allows scammers anywhere to dial hundreds of thousands of phones in a day for free, what Shadle calls spray and pray dialing. They can spoof phone numbers, making it look like they're calling from a government number. And they know much more about who they're calling than ever before. There were 3,205 reported data breaches impacting around 353 million people in 2023, according to the Identity Theft Resource Center. As a result, many of our Social Security numbers, addresses, phone numbers, or affinity group memberships are available to resourceful scammers. One California family who requested anonymity for fear of being bilked again lost $400,000 when a scammer, armed with one of their Social Security numbers, called Bank of America 16 different times to try to change the password and information on an account, according to the family's lawyer, Nick Bartell. 15 bank representatives refused, but the 16th was duped, according to Bartell, who says the scammer wired the family's savings out of the account. The bank has not refunded the family, Bartell says. Bank of America says it cannot comment on pending litigation. Police eventually found the perpetrator, but he was deceased, and the money was nowhere to be found. This could happen to anybody, says Bartell. All the guy needed was the basic information you would get from a data breach. This data often finds their way onto messaging apps like Telegram, says Frank McKenna, co-founder of Point Predictive, an AI firm that detects fraud. Cybercriminals can buy and sell tutorials and scripts for scamming people, as well as victims' personal information. For $500, you can purchase a live scamming class, 25,000 U.S. phone numbers, and instructions for sending spam links, according to a report from the security firm Guard.io. Social media platforms like Telegram began to emerge as these hubs of scam knowledge and transfer, McKenna says. Telegram CEO Pavel Durov was taken into custody in Paris August 24 and faces charges stemming from the platform's alleged role in enabling criminal activity. Durov calls the charges misguided. Scam syndicates exist all over the world, from Southeast Asia to Mexico to the Middle East, says Marty De Lima, a professor who studies scams at the University of Minnesota's School of Social Work. This is the new mafia, De Lima says. The work can be lucrative. A 2024 report by the U.S. Institute of Peace found that transnational criminal networks based in Southeast Asia steal $64 billion annually through scams In Myanmar, according to the report, there are scam compounds where people who've been lured by fake online job ads are held prisoner and forced to make calls to try to swindle Americans. The rise of artificial intelligence has been a boon for these scammers. A decade ago, you might have been the target of a poorly written email from someone claiming to be a Nigerian prince and asking for money to help them regain access to their wealth. Today, AI helps non-English speakers write more convincing missives. The technology can also be used to copy voices and likenesses to convince people their family members are in danger. That is what happened to Fauzia Vandermeer. Vandermeer, a 51-year-old radiologist who lives in Baltimore, received a call earlier this year from a number she did not recognize. She ignored it, but the person called again, so Vandermeer picked up. Worried, something had happened to a family member. She heard the sound of her sister's voice sobbing and asking for help. "I was totally freaking out," Vandermeer remembers. The voice that resembled her sister's told Vandermeer she was at a Walmart and had gotten into an accident. Then a man came on the line. He said Vandermeer's sister had hit his van, which had kilos of drugs in it, and he needed to be compensated. Vandermeer was in her car, ready to drive to the Walmart, when the man told him the matter needed to be dealt with sensitively, she says. Suspicious, Vandermeer asked one of her children to try to locate her sister, which they did, with the Find My Friend function on the iPhone. Vandermeer's sister was at home. Vandermeer sidestepped the scam, but says she easily could have been victimized. To hear a loved one on the phone crying for help, she says, immediately you are kicked into this stress response. People are more likely to fall prey to scams when they're in a heightened emotional state. That is why scammers try to target your emotions, telling you you've won some sort of prize or money, or that something terrible has happened. It's a big reason people get duped by frauds that strike observers as obvious. A 2021 AARP study found scam victims reported experiencing twice as many stressful life events in the past year as non-victims. The Department of Justice says it has stepped up efforts to catch and prosecute scammers who target Americans, even when those criminals are in other countries. From July 2022 through June 2023, the department says it pursued 300 criminal and civil actions against more than 650 defendants who collectively stole more than $1.5 billion from over 2.4 million victims. U.S. authorities also partner with foreign law enforcement offices. One such collaboration last year led Indian police to raid call centers, arresting 26 people and seizing equipment used in scamming, according to a senior DOJ official who says a similar effort is underway in Ghana. The true toll of these scams goes far beyond the financial losses. In the age of scams, consumers are stuck in a vicious cycle. A lack of faith in institutions makes us fall victim to fraud, which in turn makes us even less trusting of institutions. Monica Cottlingham is still reeling from the scam that targeted her in 2022. She says she's less trusting and never answers her phone if it is not someone in her contacts. "I am very careful about what information I reveal," she says. She was too trusting just once, she says, and now she finds it difficult to believe in anyone at all. That article was slightly abridged and was written by Alana Samuels. Here is the 8 questions page from the September 30, 2024 edition. Dana White, the Ultimate Fighting Championship CEO, on manhood, his friendship with Donald Trump, and the future of the fight business. This is written by Sean Gregory. Question, this is question-answer format. Question, what's the biggest leadership lesson you've learned? Answer, I talk to people. They are like, I want to work for myself because I want a lot of free time. You are not the right guy if that is what you're thinking about. To do the things we are doing requires a lot of time, effort, and energy. And if you're asking your people to work that hard, you better be working that hard, too. Question, why do you think Donald Trump asked you, and not a family member, to introduce him at July's Republican National Convention? Answer, listen, he and I are really, really good friends. What I think, and from what his kids have told me, I am the one guy he connects with. They call it bro out. We bro out together. Question, coming out of the conventions, there's been a fair bit of commentary about masculinity. The RNC featured Hulk Hogan. DNC highlighted second gentleman Doug Emhoff's self-effacing humor. It's been labeled toxic versus tonic masculinity. Has our politics offered competing visions of what it means to be a man? Answer, it's a great question. This friend of mine was telling me she's got a girlfriend who was saying, you know what, I'm way more attracted to Trump supporters. I like real men. It's funny. It's fascinating and interesting that there's so much emphasis on what is a real man. I don't really know what to make of it. Question, well, what in your mind does it mean to be a man? Answer, that I can answer. You lead by example. Do you really care about your employees? I would say most do not. I definitely care. We fought through COVID. We did not lay off one employee. As a man, there's all this talk about men's mental health. I can't stand that SH space T. It is a nasty, ugly world out there. As a man, you suck that SH space T up. It is a fact. Women are smarter than men. Women mature earlier than men. Lots of other things. But this is also a fact. Women want to feel safe and be protected, and a lot of women do want to be taken care of. I'm the guy that, yeah, you do open the door for women. And no, you don't split the bill 50-50 ever for any reason whatsoever. Question, how do you see sports consumption changing going forward, and what will the UFC do to adjust to these changes? Answer, streaming is the future. The world continues to get smaller and smaller and smaller. When you think about the ceiling on this business, there's 8 billion people on Earth. I continue to reinvest in this business and open performance institutes around the world. When you and I were growing up, your parents would put you in karate and taekwondo. This is the new martial art for children, men, and women. Question, is there a dream UFC market where you want to stage an event? Answer, haven't done an event in Africa yet. We have a champion now, world champion from South Africa, who just defended his title for the first time, Dricus du Plessis. South Africa would be first. Then we'll hit Nigeria or one of those places after that. We would see a fight in Africa in 25. Question, Power Slap, your slap fighting promotion, will make its international debut in Abu Dhabi, October 24. What is your response to critics who say it is unsafe? Answer, these guys go through all the same medical testing that professional fighters do. We spend the money. I used to box when I was younger. I did one of those brain studies. I have black spots all over my brain. I would not take one punch back because I loved it that much. The doctors all talk about somebody could die. I got news for all the doctors. We're all going to die. How do you want to live your life? And the final question, what podcasts do you listen to? answer, I do not listen to podcasts. I've done a million podcasts. I've never listened to a podcast in my life. I cannot be motivated by listening to somebody talk during a workout. I am motivated by music. Here's a very small column written by SS, whoever SS is, Transport, Embracing Micromobility. More than half of all car trips in the U.S. are less than 3 miles. And the maximum distance most people will walk to get to public transit is around 1/4 mile. If some of these journeys could be substituted with lower-emitting forms of transport like shared scooters, bikes, or ride-sharing, it could help cities lower their carbon emissions, says Colin Murphy of the nonprofit Shared Use Mobility Center. According to the North American Bike Share and Scooter Share Association, shared micromobility offset about 74 million pounds of CO2 emissions by replacing auto trips across North America in 2022. Bird, an e-scooter ride-sharing company operating in more than 400 U.S. cities, including Oswego, New York, estimates using e-scooters there instead of more polluting transport could remove 56 tons of CO2 annually. Ride-sharing offers an option for those unable to use scooters or bikes because of disability, age, or distance. VIA partnered with Jersey City, New Jersey, to create an on-demand, app-based public rideshare service, charging $2 per ride. VIA estimates almost 6 million miles of driving have been avoided since 2020. In Lake Tahoe, where cars are heavily used, the League to Save Lake Tahoe helped bring in ride-sharing, bikes, and e-scooters. In 2020, more than 60,000 people took over 200,000 rides on e-scooters alone, saving around 186,000 vehicle miles traveled. From The View and Climate, The Dawn of Superstorms by Porter Fox. Fox is the author of Category 5, Superstorms and the Warming Oceans That Feed Them. Earlier this summer, Hurricane Beryl broke virtually every early season hurricane record. It was the earliest Category 5 storm in history and the strongest July Atlantic hurricane, with winds of 165 miles per hour. As ocean and air temperatures spike, extreme weather is growing more intense than ever before. This is the dawn of the superstorm era, and it will only continue to rise unless we take action to stop it. More Category 4 and 5 hurricanes hit the U.S. mainland from 2017 to 2021 than from 1963 to 2016. Hurricanes today also last longer than they once did and move slower, multiplying the damage. Rapid intensification used to spin up once a century, but studies show that in the future it could occur more frequently, especially in waters bordering the East Coast, putting cities like New Orleans, Houston, Tampa, and Charleston, South Carolina, at higher risk. By 2100, the number of major hurricanes, including a new breed of ultra-intense Category 5 storms with winds of at least 190 miles per hour, is expected to increase by 20%. As with most anthropogenic catastrophes, the effects of climate change are compounding. Storm surge now rides on an elevated sea level, flooding coastlines with walls of water more than 25 feet high. Hurricane Katrina, 2005. Because the atmosphere holds around 8% more water for every 2 degrees Fahrenheit of warming, storms today carry vastly more precipitation, dumping up to 40 inches of rain in a day. Hurricane Harvey, 2017. One example of how the compounding forces of climate change are overwhelming coastlines, according to climate scientist Carrie Emanuel, if Superstorm Sandy had occurred in 1912 instead of 2012, it might not have flooded Lower Manhattan. Over the past 50 years, tropical cyclones have also taken nearly 800,000 lives worldwide and inflicted $1.5 trillion in damages. At risk on the U.S. mainland are 44 million coastal residents from Texas to Maine, a dozen major seaside cities, thousands of coastal towns, half the nation's oil refining business, and major infrastructure like highways, airports, trains, and much of the shipping industry. By the end of the century, they will likely set the U.S. back $200 billion annually. In fact, plotting the cost of weather disasters since 1980 follows a trajectory eerily similar to that of CO2 content in the atmosphere. 2022 was the third hottest U.S. summer in more than a century, in a year that saw 15 weather disasters cost more than $1 billion each. And 2023 shattered that record, going down as the hottest summer in modern history. As of August 8, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, has reported 19 confirmed billion-dollar disaster events in the U.S., adding an estimated 0.07 watts of heat to every square meter of land and water on the planet, influences pretty much everything in the ocean and sky, including thunderstorms, blizzards, squalls, nor'easters, tornadoes, heat waves, and droughts. Hiro Murakami, a project scientist at NOAA's Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Laboratory in Princeton, New Jersey, worries the regions with little to no experience with extreme weather are being drawn into storm country. A 2021 study by Yale University researchers showed that warmer waters will soon draw hurricanes north, inundating cities like Washington, New York, and Boston. A possible westward migration of the North Atlantic Tropical Cyclone Generation Zone could also result in an uptick of landfalls along the U.S. East Coast later this century. A recent study by Brooklyn's First Street Foundation also shows how hurricanes will penetrate farther inland in decades to come, affecting U.S. states as far west as New Mexico, Kansas, and Wisconsin. Millions throughout the U.S. remain unprotected. Flood insurance is optional in most of the U.S. Some federal emergency management agency loans are contingent on good credit. Corrupt contractors flock to disasters because consumer protection laws do not rein them in. And state governments often lack the funds and staffing to manage recovery. This kind of unprecedented location may be much more high risk, Murakami told me. They have no dikes, no defenses. There is an option, though, Murakami says. If we stop burning fossil fuels today, additional warming would begin to flatten almost immediately, as would the escalation of tropical cyclone intensity. Worldwide disaster is by no means predestined in any way, not in hurricane country, typhoon country, the Horn of Africa, the Philippines, the U.S. East Coast, or the wind-swept island nations of the Pacific Basin. As we can see in the data, the science, and now in our own backyards, it is merely the result of inaction. The D.C. Brief by Philip Elliott, Washington correspondent. When some of the biggest donors to conservative causes made explicit their electoral opposition to a second term for Donald Trump way back in February 2023, it came as something of a shock to the Republican orbit. After all, the powerful network organized under the auspices of billionaire industrialist Charles Koch had officially remained neutral in Trump's 2016 and 2020 campaigns, a sign of how uncomfortable his allies were with the nominee whose positions were so far afield from their own. But by the time the network gathered at the start of 2023, its position on Trump was not really a point of discussion. The deadly Capitol riot, January 6, 2021, was finally a step too far. The chief of the network's main political arm, Americans for Prosperity, told her patrons they were ready to back an alternative Republican who showed promise of winning. The group ultimately shoveled more than $32 million toward former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley and $10 million more in broader anti-Trump efforts before throwing in the towel. The hopes of reclaiming the party from this gate crasher were dashed. It's been 6 months since Haley ended her bid and just over 7 weeks since Joe Biden followed suit. Vice President Kamala Harris has scrambled the electoral map and might look like more of a threat than Biden on some key Koch issues. So where does that leave Koch world in their deep pockets? Not far from where they've been all along, doing their best to help Republicans not named Trump. Despite some pleas from Trump apologists, the leadership remains unbending in their decision to stay out of the presidential race. Instead, Koch-linked strategists say their main goal is to be a check against unified Democratic control of Washington. To them, a progressive sweep of D.C. is the biggest threat this fall. And to that end, supporters have already knocked on more than 5 million doors to help their Senate prospects, especially those in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Montana. At the House level, the Koch network and those who take their cues from it are focused on about 24 races, many of them in deep blue states like California and New York, where voters have shown a willingness to split their tickets. There are currently 17 Republicans from districts Biden won in 2020 and 5 Democrats from districts where Trump won, with Republicans holding a razor-thin majority, these races are likely to see some of the highest spending in some of the most expensive media markets. While the Koch network may be steering clear of the top of the ticket, its money is flowing mightily toward those top-target congressional races. The main Koch-aligned super PAC, Americans for Prosperity Action, is in at major levels. It was investing just shy of $70 million in all of 2022 and almost $48 million in 2020. This year, campaign finance reports covering spending through August 12 show the group had already spent $78 million on federal races. And there are still about 3 months of cash-soaked campaigning to count. Outside groups continue to have an increasingly outsized role. During the 2020 campaign, those groups spent $686 million, not far from the $663 million of 2016. Already this year, they've spent $1.3 billion. Of that eye-popping total, $778 million has been dedicated to the presidential campaigns, suggesting the Koch decision to sit out the White House race has not choked off the fire hose altogether. Health Matters by Jamie Ducharme, health correspondent. In July, I read a study that found texting with a therapist is about as effective as meeting with one over video. I was shocked. How could a strong bond between patient and provider, one of the best predictors of success in therapy, form over text? But as I dived into the research, I kept finding the same thing, that meaningful therapeutic relationships can be built just through the exchange of words on a screen. Text therapy really does seem to work. It may even offer unique benefits, says Thomas Derrick Hall, one of the researchers behind that July study. And a former executive at virtual therapy provider Talkspace. It is both immediate. You can fire off a message as soon as a difficult feeling arises, and asynchronous. Your therapist can take time to craft a thoughtful reply. Some people may find it easier to express a dark or vulnerable thought in writing, and research finds people benefit from translating their thoughts into written words, Hall says. Plus, he adds, text therapy may offer the benefit of state-based learning. The notion that it is better to study for a test in the room where you will take it. Therapeutic principles may sink in better when delivered where people will use them, like at home or work. Text therapy is not perfect, but no form of mental health care is, Hall says. There will always be good and bad therapists and patient matches, whether therapy is delivered in private practice or through an iPhone. I do not think there's anything about message-based care that reduces quality in principle, Hall says. Increasingly, the data are on his side. This final article is likely to be abridged. The Risk Report by Ian Bremmer, Overturning the Cradle of the Arab Spring. The Fruit Vendor, Mohamed Bouazizi's self-immolation 14 years ago, inspired Tunisians to topple their longtime dictator and kicked off the 2011 Arab Spring. Of all the countries in the region that caught the revolutionary bug, Tunisia was the only one that managed to build a multi-party democracy with separation of powers and freedom of expression, for a while becoming the poster child of successful democratization. Then came President Kais Saied, an uncharismatic constitutional lawyer, who was elected in 2019 on a populist anti-corruption platform that played to Tunisians' post-revolutionary disillusion with political gridlock and economic stagnation. 5 years later, the birthplace of the Arab Spring has become the scene of alarming democratic backsliding. The first major sign of trouble was in 2021 when Saied was used the COVID-19 pandemic to centralize his power. The Tunisian president suspended the constitution, fired a prime minister, and invoked emergency protocols to govern by decree. In 2022, he went further still, dissolving parliament and rewriting the constitution. The persecution of opposition politicians, critics, activists, journalists, and union leaders has only increased since. That includes Rached Ghannouchi, leader of the main opposition Ennahda party, Lotfi Merayhi, head of the Republican Union Party, Abir Moussi, president of the Free Desturian Party. All three are now behind bars on trumped-up charges. With Saied's term set to expire October 23, Tunisia's strongman is seeking 5 more years as president in new elections he scheduled for October 6. But having spent his entire tenure dismantling democratic checks and balances, consolidating power, and muzzling dissent, this contest will be neither free nor fair. All credible would-be challengers to Saied have been imprisoned, scared into exile, or excluded from running. September 2, Tunisia's supposedly independent electoral commission, whose 7 members were appointed by the president, approved just 2 relatively unknown candidates in defiance of an order by the country's highest court to allow 3 additional candidates to run. One of them, Ayachi Zamel, has since been arrested and charged with falsifying ballot signatures. It is unclear whether he will be allowed to run. Despite some public concern about Saeed's autocratic drift, he remains relatively popular. His xenophobic and anti-establishment rhetoric resonates strongly with a large segment of the population that believes democracy did little to improve their living standards. Saeed's biggest vulnerability comes from the worsening socioeconomic conditions most Tunisians have experienced under his rule. After all, the one thing people dislike more than a dictator is a dictator who fails to deliver the goods. While Saeed has so far managed to stave off a sovereign default on Tunisia's bloated foreign debt without resorting to a maligned but much-needed IMF loan, this has come at the cost of higher inflation, slower economic growth, and frequent food and fuel shortages. The government's also increasingly resorting to borrowing from the once independent central bank, as well as local banks, to cover its growing financing needs, which will further drive up inflation and create financial risks. As economic challenges deepen, citizens' trust in their government will falter, demands for change will build, protests and repression may follow. Perhaps there will even be calls for new elections. But Tunisians will have little recourse after Kais Saied's near certain and certainly illegitimate re-election entrenches Tunisians' autocracy and marks the definitive end of the Arab Spring's last surviving democratic experiment. We have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com or call 919-875-8889. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.